Oh, hello. Welcome back. Week six. Can't believe it's been a month and a half already. Thanks everybody for everyone who's been listening, downloading, subscribing, telling their friends. I really appreciate it. Can't express that enough. If you haven't already, go follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Podcast on a Mountain. We have the YouTube videos are up, YouTube Podcast on a Mountain. And pompod.net for our website, pompod.net. All right, this week was an impromptu podcast. I originally had scheduled one with a couple of my buddies. We had some scheduling conflicts. One of them couldn't go. I ended up getting stuck at work late, so I couldn't make it. So last night, and today is Monday, the 24th of July. So last night being Sunday, my girlfriend and I just decided to record a quick episode. We didn't go on a hike or anything. We just sat outside. She has at her house is a beautiful view of the Wapak Mountain Range, which goes from northern Massachusetts into southern New Hampshire. So we sat outside, watched the sun go down. We dodged bats as they dive bombed us as the sun went down, and just shot the shit about a bunch of stuff for about an hour and a half or so. And it actually turned out to be an awesome episode. So you might see a lot more of her late in the coming episodes because I don't have anything scheduled at the moment. There's been some scheduling conflicts. I do have a couple guys who are going to come on. I won't say who they are yet, but a little hint is it won't be until after the CrossFit Games. So stay tuned and we'll see who that is. But yeah, the next few weeks is probably going to be a lot of me and Erica and maybe some podcasts by myself if need be, just me and my random thoughts. But I really liked how this one went. We talked about a lot of stuff here. We talked about the opiate crisis. Talk about what we can do about it. Should all drugs be illegal? Really controversial stance. What else? We talked about some crazy study from the 1930s, which belittled kids with stuttering and language defects that ruined them for the rest of their lives. We talked about an upcoming trail race I'm doing, which make sure you follow along on Instagram because I'm gonna start posting weekly my training regimen for this. For this race, it's an 18-mile race. It'll be the second year I've done this in a row. It's called the Wapak Trail Race. It's that same mountain range that we sat and looked at while doing this episode. It's a 9-mile or 18-mile, 9 miles down and back. It's on Labor Day, and I explained more of it in the very first probably 10 minutes or so of this episode. But I'm gonna be posting my training regimen because I haven't been training at all, so I'm gonna try something very different than what I did last year. I'm gonna start posting that to Instagram. So, Podcast on a Mountain on Instagram, you can check that out. I'll be posting daily trainings, meals. I'm gonna try to do this fully fat adaptive using a ketogenic diet. So, I'm interested to see how that goes. And if you are too, you can follow along there. What else we got? Amazon. You shop with Amazon? Of course you do. Next time you do, think of us first if you want to help us out. Go to pompod.net, pompod.net. Or any of the descriptions in our YouTube videos, and click on any of the Amazon links there. If you go to pompod.net and go to scroll to the bottom of the homepage, there's an Amazon banner. You can click on that, and then just shop as you normally would. It'll bring you right to Amazon. It's at no extra cost to you, and what it does is Amazon just gives me a little bit of a kickback just for sending you there. So it helps us out. If you really want to help out, that's how you can do it. If you really want to help out even more, tell a friend about this episode. Tell a friend about this podcast. Tell five friends. Tell them to go check us out. Help us spread the word. Help us climb the leaderboards on iTunes. Go to iTunes, rate and review and subscribe. The more ratings we get, the higher we climb on the, I don't think call them rankings or leaderboards or I guess the rankings would it would be called. And the higher we climb, the more people that find out about this, the more cool people I get to have on here to interview for you guys. So help us out there. And I think that's all I got for you. Yeah, so without further ado, this is episode with my beautiful, hilarious girlfriend, Erica. Bye-bye.
My uncle goes, "I guess you're finally interesting." I said no, his friend ditched him.
Fans are gonna hate you. Kidding.
Fucking mosquitoes are gonna ruin this.
Do you have bug
I'm
spray?
gonna try not to swear the whole time.
Why am I getting feedback? Turn that down a little bit. Give me a test.
Testing 1, 2.
Your voice is way louder than mine.
Great. Right, well, if I'm any quieter, I'm going to sound like a guy.
I'm not saying be quiet, I just have to adjust the levels. I might turn your mic down just to put the mic a little lower. Right about there should be good.
It's the closest you've gotten to me all day.
Might be, if you keep speaking loudly. I might put it by your feet.
Ew! Stop farting.
They're pretty bad.
Okay, well, I can't, like, do this. If I'm in your wind and you're expecting me not to say anything about it, you're wrong.
I've been eating keto again for the last, like, 5 days, and my body is just going nuts about it. I'm getting ready. I didn't realize that race.
I feel like we should do this inside. The bugs are going to kill us.
Do you have bug spray?
No, and I'm not. No.
No, it's all about being outside.
Oh, my God.
I didn't realize the Wapak race is in like a month.
We should have done a campfire and done it. Oh, yeah, you're not. You're doing it?
Yeah.
Is and it still too close?
No, you're fine.
All right, well, let's do this because it's 8:30.
It's already recording.
Oh. All right. No, it's not.
Yes, it is. See the red light? All right. So, like, for sure, not be on your phone the whole time.
I'm not. Preparing.
But I didn't realize that was creeping up so fast, and I haven't been training for it. And I wanted to do it completely keto this year, because last year I feel like that, because I used, like, the gels and the glucose tabs and everything, I feel like I burnt out. Mm-hmm. That was why I burnt out so bad, and I had such a bad second half of the race. So I've been studying a lot of trail runners online who have been racing.
Using fats.
Yeah, being turning their body fat adaptive and on the trail just eating like cashews and like
mm-hmm.
just healthy fats in the morning before the race and not really supplementing with the glucose stuff, because it makes sense too, because I crashed so hard.
Well, they make that coconut oil, like MCT oil.
Yeah. I'll probably bring
in your water or something.
I honestly, if I do it right, and I'm, that's the whole point of keto, is it's a long slow burn. The best way I've had it explained to me is, like, when you have a fire going, when you throw twigs and leaves on and stuff, you get that quick burst of flame, but it burns out fast. Yeah. And that's, like, a high glycemic carbohydrate diet. But when your body's fat adaptive, it's like throwing a big old log on it.
Yeah.
And you're getting that long, slow, steady burn. So I really won't need – it's not the longest race in the world. It's only 18 miles. So if I was doing, like, a 50-mile race or anything that lasted over, like, 24 hours. Well, yeah, but in all, it's like I did it in 4 hours and 9 minutes last year, which I think I can blow that out of the water this year. But if I were doing like a long, like 24-hour plus race, I definitely need to supplement. But if I do this right, if I get my body fat adaptive now, I can just have a nice meal in the morning of healthy fats, and I'll be good for the race. Maybe bring some cashews with me, just something to snack on. But other than that, I should be good. So I'm curious to see how that works, because last year, the first 5 miles I crushed. I probably went too fast out of the gate, and I was at the head of the pack for a while. Not in first place by any means, but I was within racing distance of the first place guy for a while. And then the turnaround point at 9 miles, or like nine, it's technically like an 18.6 mile race. So at the turnaround point of 9.3, I felt amazing. And that was the first time you have three water and snack stops. There's mm-hmm. one on the way there, one at the turnaround point, then you hit that one on the way back again. And at the first one, I stopped and threw down some water real quick, but that was it. But at the turnaround point, I felt like I thought I needed more to keep me going, so they have like little like snack sized candy bars there. So I ate like a Snickers bar and like a little chunk of banana and some oranges with some Gatorade. And I feel like that's why I cramped up so bad at the end. And then my back locked up, because I was pacing for like a 3 hour and 25, maybe 35 minute finish, and I ended up finishing in 4 hours and 9 minutes. So I think that's why. And I was drinking plenty of water. I think the reason why I cramped up so bad is because I had that sugary stuff.
Gatorade
too, yeah.
Dehydrates you faster than anything.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I'm going to treat my body like a guinea pig this year and see how I can do on a keto diet.
It definitely helps with energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing I noticed when I did it. It's just, it's hard if you're like even close to lactose, because it's easy to get your fats in by dairy.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper that way too, but it just kills you if you have any type of sensitivity to dairy.
I'm curious, because when I did it before, I've never done it when I do such an extreme task. When I did it before, I was still working out and stuff, but nothing that lasts 3 to 4 hours plus. I'm curious to see how my body's going to be.
Yeah.
With that much. Yeah. Exerting that much energy. But
have you decided if you were going to, can you take shroom tech at all?
I still take that.
You still take that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I actually haven't in a while, to be honest.
Yeah.
I haven't had any on it products in a while. I ran out a few months ago. I haven't ordered any, but I took shroom tech last year and I feel like it really helped in my training. But
yeah.
We'll see. I this year it crept up on me. I can't believe it's already
the end of July.
It's already like a month out, so
yeah.
I'm not gonna have time to, like, last year
you were training for it.
I trained for probably like 3 months. And I can still get a good amount of training in 1 month, but I'm really going to change the way I did it, because last year I never logged a ton of miles. I don't believe in the old style of training for running that says you have to do a ton of miles. I think it's bad for your body, bad for your joints. But I would do...
Well, you have to be a little bit acclimated to what you're going to be doing.
No, yeah. What I'm saying is the old school thought for training for a marathon is you have to run like 10 to 20 miles every time you run, which I don't think that's true at all. But last year I would run 3 days a week and then strength train opposite days. But I'd do a short day, which was anywhere from like 3 to 5 miles, a medium day, which was like 5 to 7.5 or so. And then my long day would be like 8 to 10 miles. I never really... The day that I ran the 18-mile race was the first time in my life that I've ever ran 18 miles in a row.
Yeah.
That was the most I've ever ran in my life. I don't think I've ever ran more than 12 miles, maybe even 10 miles before that. So, and I think I did pretty well because I was doing a lot of strength training. So this year, that was 3 months last year. So this year I'm only going to have a month. I feel like I'm definitely in better overall shape this year, but I'm definitely not in running shape right now. So I'm going to have to... I think I'll still do those short, medium, long days, but I'm definitely have to implement a lot more strength training as well, just to get my legs. But I have been doing a lot more hiking this year too, so I feel like my legs are stronger.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
In that aspect, yeah. Yeah. Your back is stronger, which was the whole issue in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, that sucked.
I would even go get a massage before you go.
Yeah.
Like the night before, go mm-hmm. get an hour massage.
Well, this year, I really wasn't. When I did the race last year, I was still training kind of with CrossFit style modalities, but this year I've obviously been doing way more since I've been working at the gym. So, and on top of that, I've been working a lot more mobility. So I think on top of being stronger this year, I feel like my muscles are... I'm less apt to lock up while I'm out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. Should be fun, though. The guy who won last year did it in, like, 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That guy is nuts. I think the course record is, like, 2 hours and 34, 36 minutes, something nuts like that.
I can't decide if I've ever experienced runner's high or not.
How come?
Because I've never ran far enough. I've never felt so good that I could run for hours. Like, at some point,
well, it's not necessarily runner's high.
I'm done. Like, I feel like anytime I've heard someone talk about runner's high, it's
For me, runner's high is more of a...
They just want to keep running. Like, they don't feel anything anymore. They just run.
And I don't think that's
the
case.
I'm always like, all right, well, I'm definitely cramping up. It felt good for a while.
No, because I get runner's high, but it's not... Like, I'm definitely tired after a long run, but for me, it's more mental clarity.
Yeah.
Runner's high for me is when I'm running, and I've been running for a long distance, and then, like, I feel like my brain is firing on all cylinders. I don't really know how to explain it. Like, maybe I'm thinking about something for the podcast, or maybe I'm trying to, I have some problem at work, or something, like, a personal life, I'm trying to figure out, like, some issue, and when I go for a nice long run, like, things just clear up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you just feel good. You feel elated. You feel happy.
Well, that's endorphins.
Exactly. That's what it is. It's not that you run 5 miles, and all of a sudden you can run 10 more. That's not necessarily runner's high. It's more of a head clarity.
Would be more helpful if you could.
That's why I love running, is the mental clarity and the...
Yeah.
Especially if you throw on some music, like...
Yeah, well...
Like, I'll throw on something that... I don't listen to music that I... How do I put it? Not that I don't enjoy it, but... I won't put on something that I want to sing along to. I'll throw on, like... A long jazz
Disturbed.
Track. No. Like something soothing, like just like a saxophone. Or something
own.
Like that. Or I don't know, something that's just soothing that you just zone out.
I'm just saying, if you're coming up on a big hill and Down with the Sickness comes on, it's really helpful. You're not going to stop, because if you think of the lead singer of that Disturbed chasing you up the hill, it helps.
Well, that's not runner's high, though. That's how
I get up a tough hill.
But that's how music... It is crazy how music has an effect on you.
It really does. Music completely changes your mood. It just... Which seems obvious, but you can listen to one song and be thinking about something in your life, about how that song makes you feel, and then another song will come on, and you're thinking a totally different way.
And your emotions completely flip.
In 3 minutes.
Yeah. I'll be at the gym during, like, a long trip, or you're, like, 30 minutes into a workout, and you're, like, you're dying, and you just can't wait for it to be over, and then a good song comes on, or just something that's upbeat, and all of a sudden you get this...
Yep, you're happy.
This second wind again, and you're just, you're going as fast as you were at the beginning. It's crazy how that works.
I didn't like Beyonce for a while, and lately, I just can't get enough. I don't know what it
Why?
Is. I don't know. I went from wanting to be Beyonce to... like over it, and now every day, every time I clean the barbershop, it's Beyonce.
I got into the head, I could not name one of her songs.
Yeah, you could.
No, I couldn't. I would know them if I heard them, but I couldn't name any of them.
It's a lot of good ones. And in a month, I'll be sick of her again, and I'll move on to something else. And we're going to the Classic this weekend, and Bob Seger's playing with the Eagles, which is going to be awesome.
How the hell did you just segue from Beyonce to Bob Seger?
I'm just thinking about music. I'm just thinking about all the different types of music. And, like, anytime someone asks me, what kind of music do you like, and they say, don't say anything. They could really listen to anything if it's good enough, if it has the right beat or the right whatever. I mean...
I used to say... I'd listen to anything until recently.
But I can't listen to Alice in Chains.
Since I started working...
Or you two.
Since I started working at the gym, they play a lot of, like, whatever just played over the radio, and a lot of, like...
And that's a bat.
A lot of newer rap will play. And first of all, they all sound the same to me. I cannot differentiate one person from another. Second of all, I can't tell what they're fucking saying half the time.
Right.
Third of all, when I can tell what they're saying... The shit they say is so goddamn stupid.
Molly Percocet? I've been saying it all week.
I don't know what that means.
They just keep saying Molly Percocet over and over again. And it was out of my head this weekend, and I'm driving home, and I caught the tail end of it. It's some stupid rap song that is just terrible and just seems like a bad time to release Molly Percocet with all of the issues.
I don't get
it.
I don't get how those schmucks are freaking millionaires.
And that's the most infuriating thing, is that they... can come out with a song like that and make more in a month than I'll make in my entire life.
And
it's awful.
Whatever. If you like that music, to each their own. I'm sure people fucking hate the music that I love.
Right.
But at least there's some
point.
But there's talent behind it. Like, if these guys could play an instrument and then their lyrics are fucking stupid, I'd be like, well, at least I can appreciate that they can play a saxophone or whatever it may be. I don't know. But there's one song my coworker showed me, and the lyrics are literally, "Put your titty ass hands in the air." I have so many questions about that line.
Yeah.
Are you putting your titties, your ass, and your hands in the air at the same time? If so, how do you put your titties in the air? How do you put them in the air at the same time as your ass and your hands?
You have to be really zen to do it.
I don't get what's going on in that song.
They're really just connecting their auras, I think, and just everything is starting to float. And there's just, it's just some...
And do women at the concerts, like, start shaking the boobs in the air?
Who knows? I wouldn't even go to one. I'd be so afraid for my life.
Again, I'm not saying if you like that music, you're a bad person. But if you're listening to this and you're my friend, I'm going to need you to take out your phone, scroll down to my name, delete it from your phone, because we're no longer friends.
I had a coworker ask me if I wanted to go to a Little John concert, and I was never more terrified. Like, at that moment, I was like, please don't tell me you're going. Nothing good can happen at a Little John concert. What good can happen?
Stabbings. Your best case scenario is you only get stabbed twice.
I agree.
That's it.
It was, I mean.
Stop moving the mic around.
There's mosquitoes and bats. I need to protect myself.
Oh yeah, we didn't even say where we were. We're not on a mountain, but we're looking at one.
I mean, technically, what even is a mountain?
You looked it up earlier.
I can Google
it. You already looked it up, so
you
should know.
But I don't remember the definition.
It's a raised landmass.
We are the highest mound of land in the surrounding area, which technically we're on a mountain.
Well, no, I think there's a certain elevation.
And we're looking at Mount Watatig, so it counts.
No, there's a certain...
And there's bats flying around my head, so I think that it deserves the credit of a mountain. Because
there has to be a certain elevation and a prominence.
It's not true. It's not what Google said.
Look it up again, then. I think you're wrong.
Oh, God. You always
because Watatig barely qualifies as a mountain because of its elevation.
That's just... People ski down it. They used to.
Well, it is a mountain. I'm saying it, but it barely qualifies as a mountain. Google, what is a mountain?
What?
So, yeah, we're in Ashby, Mass. We're at Erica's house, sitting in her backyard looking at Mount Watatig and the Wapak Trail Range, which includes Mount Nipswich, Mount Pratt, Mount Watatig, and Mount Barrett, I believe, is the four.
A mountain is a large natural elevation of the Earth's surface rising abruptly from the surrounding level. A large, steep hill. Technically, we're on a mountain.
I don't think we technically are.
Okay, then Google doesn't lie to people. It's a large pile of or quantity of something.
That's a dictionary definition.
Oh, wait,
definition.
That's a mountain of paperwork.
That's just a dictionary definition. Look up.
Characterized by remoteness and inaccessibility. Nobody comes to see me here. So inaccessible seems right.
No one comes here because your dad uses air horns to scare people away.
Well, he doesn't want a gun in the house.
He has katanas.
He has a sword that'll fuck you up. And he's got a couple swords that'll fuck you up.
Yeah, and there's also a sword on the deck, so if someone wants to break in, it's a fair fight, because there's one sitting out here, too.
He has a French bayonet that was banned during the Civil War. It fucked people up so bad. And it's sitting under his pillow.
Right,
we need
not,
a dog.
We're not in a mountain.
We need a dog.
You got Gizmo. McKinley just fucked up a mouse down there.
Yeah, I came home from Maine last weekend, and there was a circle of chipmunks, like he was having a seance with dead chipmunks. We were like, that's a lot.
I read a stat recently, I think I told you this before, but house cats.
This bat can't figure out where he wants to go.
House cats in the United States alone, I believe it was either 3.6 or 6 kills, 3.6 or 6.3 billion animals a year.
I believe that.
And that's just house cats.
We don't have a
between
mouse problem.
Chipmunks, squirrels, birds, billions of them are killed by house cats every year.
There's a lot of cats in the world.
That's so much, though, billions.
Yeah, it's a lot.
How many house cats would you say there were in...
I don't know. A lot?
There's 330 million people in the United States.
Oh my God. First of all, how do you even know that?
It's a common known statistic. Say there's one cat per household, because some people don't have cats, some people like me have three.
And some have three.
Yeah. So say there's one. So say there's equal amount, there's 330 million.
Which are up for adoption, by the way.
That means they're not. That means each house cat kills. No, that can't be right. How many? Google how many?
I mean,
how many house cats are there in the United
States?
They
probably kill two mice a day, and there's two of them.
Can you Google how many house cats are there in the United States, approximately? This is nice. I usually have someone to pull up stats for me. Usually I'm just rambling about stuff that's probably wrong.
Well, you should appreciate me more. What am I Googling?
Wow. How many house cats are there in the United States?
House cats. Are there, I hate filler words, in the United States?
Of America.
No. They get it. Google gets it. It's estimated that 78 million dogs and 85.8 million cats.
So way less than people.
Are owned in the United States.
So then Google, how many animals do cats kill a year? So 85 million cats.
How many animals do cats kill a year? I'm glad I'm not the only one looking this up. Oh, these cats look mean. They look like they're going to fuck shit up.
How many?
Like they sent
3.7 billion.
Cats kill billions of animals annually, study finds. Thanks, that's specific. Cats are responsible for the deaths of 1.4 to 3.7 billion birds.
Divided by 85.
And 6.9 to 20.7 billion mammals every year.
That means, so 3.7 billion divided by 85,000, each cat kills 43.5 mammals a year. Which actually seems pretty low. I feel like your two cats kill way more than that. They definitely fill their quota.
Yeah, that's a lot. And then they come in, right?
And but that's still a lot.
If you're
43.
I hate outdoor cats because they come in and then after killing all day, they murdered all day. And then they come in and they snuggle in into your sheets.
And lick you.
Lick you, which is just the most disgusting thing. And people like it, too. Like, Duple likes it.
Duple likes when my cat licks him.
It's
He's
just fucking weird.
He actually used to make my cats lick him.
Yeah, no. That's just like a fetish. That is categorized. There's normal, and then there's people that like when cats lick them.
He's a freak.
And there's just, you're just, I don't, I mean, I like Duple.
He's allergic to cats, too, which is a funny thing.
Oh, my God. That means you're addicted to it.
Oh, no. He did it, like, once when he was over.
There's, like, smelling, newspaper, and it's, like, kind of weird. And then there's, like, letting cats lick you, which is just...
You ever watch that My Strange Addiction show?
Yes.
I saw a lady eat a couch once.
When I feel bad about myself, I look
that
up. What
were we watching in D.C.? Hoarders.
Hoarders.
That was disgusting.
And then I realized that my dad's collection is pretty close. Like, there's a borderline. Like, it's just if everyone accepts
it. Well, your dad's running a business. He's selling antiques. He's not piling cat shit in his living room.
That's true.
And doesn't have a piss bucket.
But remember the guy? He's like, they're just collectibles, but...
Yeah, but he also couldn't move.
The town was like, this is a public nuisance. People
he couldn't move through his house, though.
Yeah, that was really bad. I had a customer that was a hoarder, and she came in one day, and she said that she had Lysol spray all over her. Because she was Lysoling her car because she was selling it. And her car was chock full
of
just stuff.
My aunt's like that. It's pretty bad.
And it was, I can't even imagine what her house is like.
Yeah.
Can't even imagine.
I love my aunt to death, but I just can't go to her house. It's so gross.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But a lot of it comes from, like, people are, like, abused, and that's how they... A lot of the times when you watch those shows...
There's a lot of psychological issues going
on.
It's
because people were, like, neglected as kids or abused as kids. And that's their outlet. It's just weird how the brain, like, supplements for traumatic experiences.
That came really close.
Yeah, I'm not ready to get a shot of rabies
shot. It's a fruit bat. It's not going to bite you.
What if he thinks I'm sweet?
No, it is strange how different traumatic incidences, like, it manifests differently in people. Or just how addiction manifests in people in general.
Yeah.
I always found it strange that, like, I had my issues with alcohol. But you could put a pile of pills in front of me or cocaine or whatever it be, and it just sit
well,
there
everybody
like
everybody has their vice.
I have no interest in that at all, but
this
like
bat needs to get lost.
Good luck getting a bottle of whiskey out of my hands, you know. But then there's other people,
chocolate bars, man.
There's other people who are the opposite. Like they don't want to drink at all, but all they can do is like I meet them at work all the time. Because I don't think I've told listeners before, I work at a rehab center, but there's people who have never touched alcohol in their life, but they can't kick heroin or whatever it is. It's just, it's weird how addiction
yeah.
manifests at first, or addiction in general is a mystery, but then how it manifests into certain substances or certain behaviors. Like, it doesn't have to just be a substance. You can be addicted to gambling or food or codependency,
yeah.
whatever it may be,
yeah.
like, the way it manifests, or hoarding, or whatever
yeah.
it is. There's two bats now.
Yeah, they're... I don't like this. Something's gonna hit me in the face. Ugh. Animals. I don't even like going for runs because I really think a bear is just gonna come out of the woods. Like, it's just gonna be my day and a bear. And I'm gonna be so tired and be like, yeah, I'm gonna go for a really long run today. I'm gonna listen to Zach and just push myself. And I'm gonna be at the tail end of my run. And a bear is gonna trot out of the woods and I'm not gonna have any energy left. That's
well,
what I think about.
The good news is around here. Well, first of all, it's ridiculous.
It's not.
Second of all.
It happened to my aunt.
I almost hit a bear on my bike last year, but I'll
and
tell,
then you
I'll tell
hit
a story
a bear
after.
A mile away, so it's not that crazy.
But no, well, the odds are in your favor, because first of all, the odds of that happening are slim to none.
I know, but...
Secondly, like last year, I was riding my mountain bike in this area, and I was coming down a hill, and I came around a corner, and probably 65, 75 yards ahead of me was a black bear standing there. And I stand on my brakes... And it looked at me, and we kind of looked at each other for like 5 seconds, and I put my hands up and I made a loud noise, and it just went running into the woods. But luckily, we don't have grizzlies in this area. Brown bears are super, super rare. So you're most likely going to, if you are going to encounter a bear, it's going to be a black bear, and which means more likely than not, it's way more scared of you, unless it's a mama with her cubs. But
mm-hmm.
if you just... make some noise and they usually run away and then you're fine,
you know.
And then again, and even
that was close
and even further than that, they very rarely, black bears do can attack humans if they're hungry enough, but for the most part they just eat berries and stuff. They're omnivores, but they would rather eat plants and berries. They will attack if they're hungry enough, but it's black bear attacks on humans are super rare.
So the more I go outside, the more I realize I know nothing about where I live and the outdoors. Emily, my cousin Emily, is like, she know, if I had to go out into the woods and someone was like, you can take one person with you, you have to like leave your house and live in the woods, I would take Emily.
Oh yeah, you're be fucked.
She knows so much about everything. Until last week, I didn't even know what poison ivy looked like.
Really?
Until I almost stepped in it. My mom's like, that's poison ivy. I didn't even know. I didn't know
well,
what
you weren't allergic
to, do
to it,
if a
are
bear
you?
Chased you. I didn't know where to fish.
If it's brown, lay down. If it's black, fight back.
And I would get
that's
that
a trick
mixed
for bears.
Up.
Well, it rhymes.
I've only ever seen without a paddle, and that I would be that guy.
Well, that's a comedy.
In the fetal position. Okay, but I'm pretty literal, and I would probably...
You're not allergic to poison ivy, are you?
Isn't everyone? Isn't that why everyone breaks out?
No. There are people who
so
don't
you
get
only,
it.
So if you step in poison ivy and you're not allergic to it, you won't get...
I know
infected?
People who don't get poison ivy. I get it by looking at it. I'm so allergic to it.
How's your yeast infection?
It's good. Gone. No yeast infection can bring me down.
Oh, man.
I'm way too manly for a yeast infection.
A yeast infection?
A yeast infection. All right, I feel like I got to explain this now because people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? So,
one out of two of us has had a yeast infection in our lives, and it wasn't me.
So I woke up last week with a little dot on my chest, and it was itchy, and I didn't think much about it. I thought it was
precursor.
All right, let me tell the story.
Wait, no, precursor. My mom burned poison sumac during a s'mores campfire.
Oh, yeah, I guess we should back up a little bit.
And
even,
my dad
even though it
in
had,
the house figured it out.
Even though this had zero effect, the day before,
it was a
Erica's
correlation.
Daughter asked me if we could make s'mores, and I said sure, and I asked her mother I asked Erica's mom if there was stuff around we could, any firewood we can burn. She said, yeah, there's a big brush pile down there next to the fire pit, just use that. So I go down, I light a fire, and it's going, and as I'm leaning over the fire, smoke pouring on my face, as I'm adding stuff to it, Erica comes out screaming out of the house, "Don't use that wood. It might be poison sumac." So I, of course, start freaking out because I've been breathing this in. It's on my body. So I go to take a hot shower and scrub. Turns out it wasn't sumac. It was fine. But so that had no effect. But I thought I was going to have a rash from that. But the next day I did wake up with a small rash. So I thought, okay, maybe it was that. Maybe there was some poison ivy or something hidden in there. But it was just a little small dot on my chest. It kind of looked like a bug bite and it was kind of itchy. And I didn't think much of it because I'm outside a lot. I'm hiking a lot. So I thought it was just a bug bite. Threw a little anti-itch cream like hydrocortisone on it and didn't think about it again. Next day I wake up and it's like, it's a little bigger. It's probably like the size of a quarter, maybe a little smaller than a quarter. So at that point I'm thinking maybe I got bit by like a spider or something because it's kind of circular. It's not a ring. It wasn't ringworm or anything like that, but it was kind of a circular red spot and still very itchy. So I thought, okay, I'll just keep an eye on this. Maybe it was a spider bite or something. Next day I wake up. It's like the size of my hand across my chest. And now the gears start turning, and I'm like, all right, what the hell is this? It could be poison ivy, but it wasn't bubbly or anything like that. Could be just like, I don't know, maybe I used a different detergent or something. Maybe just having like a little bit of a rash. I have sensitive skin. So, again, really wasn't thinking too much about it. Next day I wake up, and it's like across my chest. It's fiery hot red. It's raised probably like a quarter of an inch off my chest. It's not bubbling or anything, but it's itchy as all hell and spreading. Like I can see it. I feel like I can see it spreading by the hour. So I make the awesome decision to start Googling what it could be. And I get any answer from acute dermatitis to scabies or MRSA. So I'm at work. And like I mentioned, I work at drug and alcohol rehabilitation center. So I go to one of the nurses. And I'm kind of freaking out. It's like 12 in the afternoon at this point, and it's already way bigger than it was in the morning. And I go to one of the nurses. I say, "Can you check this thing out of my chest? I have no clue what it is." She goes, "Yeah, of course." So I show her it, and she goes, "Oh, my God. I've never seen anything like that before. You need to go to the hospital immediately." So now I'm freaking out. I leave work, go to the hospital. I get brought in right away, and the nurse comes in, and he goes, "All right, show me what's on your chest." And I take my shirt off, and he goes, "Oh, it makes this face." I'm like, "Hey, man, don't do that." I'm already freaking out a little bit. So he's, like, looking at it, making just, like, grossed-out faces at it. And I'm not, like...
All right, this bat's getting too close for comfort. Okay, continue.
My anxiety's going through the roof now. Like, I have no clue what this is. And he's asked me questions. He's like... "Does anyone you know have this?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Did you touch anybody who had this?" I'm like, "No, man. I didn't fucking go poking at this thing. Like, obviously, if I saw this in somebody, I'd probably make the same face."
"It looks like it hurts. Let me rub it a little bit."
"I'd probably make the same face that you just made at me." So he's asking me questions, like, trying to determine what this is. And he's like, "Yeah, I have no idea what this is either." So I'm like, great. This is
glad you're doing your job.
Two nurses in a row now that have said, like, "I have no idea what this is." So the doctor comes in, and she immediately goes, "Oh, my God." And I'm like... "All right, guys, like, I don't know if there's a class in med school or at the very least, like, a chapter in your textbook about reactions in bedside manner, but you guys aren't making me feel very comfortable." So she starts, I kid you not, these are her exact words. The first words out of her mouth besides, "Oh, my God," was, "Well, this could either be one of two things, either a yeast infection or male breast cancer looks a lot like this." So I'm like, all right, gonna have to stop you again. First of all, those two diagnoses couldn't be any further from each other on the spectrum. So you're leaving a lot of gray area
it's
in the middle.
It's all or nothing, babe.
Second of all, I don't know which one's more emasculating. I'm kind of hoping it's breast cancer because the yeast infection sounds a lot worse.
Yeah.
But yeah, it turns out, I don't even know if it, she technically didn't say it was a yeast infection, but she said it was some type of fungal infection I got, and she still, like, they never actually gave me a diagnosis, but they gave me a fungal medication and a cream, and it went away. So I guess it was some fungal something or other.
I ran this by someone, because to go from one extreme to the other, like, fine, you're doing your job, but if you really thought it might be breast cancer, why would you spend any more time not getting it checked? I mean, you're gonna start with a fungal cream. Oh, say, so what if it's not a fungal cream?
I couldn't believe she said.
And you're taking
cancer.
Medication.
I can't even believe she used the C word.
And someone, I told somebody this, and they said, well, I guess now the way it works is that, and I could be wrong, but they start with, like, the least invasive form of treatment because insurances won't cover things that you start at
a mammogram. But if she honestly
like,
thought...
they won't start it.
But if she honestly thought, like... even 1% that
but
it was.
But she did say that.
No, but wholeheart. I think she was just speaking out loud at that point. If she even like 1% of her was convinced it was breast cancer, you wouldn't say that to somebody because there's a chance you could be wrong. You would say, you'd probably go call for some testing.
Right.
You wouldn't give them a cream and tell them to go home and come back if it gets worse in a week.
And I could be wrong. Maybe you're right. Maybe that is like she, 90% of her instinct said that's probably just a fungal infection.
I think she was just thinking out loud. Like, I'm not mad she said it, but I was just really surprised when she said cancer.
Well,
my head snapped around and looked at her.
Of course. Anytime you hear that, you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, how, why we need to take care of it right now? Like, that's a freak out moment. So for her to be like, yeah, just throw some cream on and call it a day, let us know if it doesn't go away.
And then I started freaking out after because it... The spot that was rash was only like...
like the inside was going away, but the ring was staying.
But there was an outer ring forming. Right. But then I looked up the medication they gave me, and one of the side effects is a red ring rash.
Weird.
And I stopped taking that medicine on Wednesday, and that's going away now. So the only thing I could think of was I work at a CrossFit gym on the side, and that week that I got that, it was raining a lot. We had a lot of thunderstorms that week, and it was super humid. And we don't have air conditioning in the gym. We have, like, big bay doors that we open. And all the when it gets humid out, all the humidity just, like, sits in the gym. So I'm thinking because I worked out and it was just so humid and I had, like, a sweaty T-shirt on that it was just, like, the perfect environment for it to fester and...
gross.
And
fester's
build.
A terrible
That's
word.
That's a really gross word.
Fester comes right after moist.
I think fester's worse than moist.
No. Because fester, is at least, is the name of a character, too. Like, you can think of Uncle Fester from the Addams Family, but
with fester you think
moist,
of something like
no way out, it's just there.
Fester you think of something like growing and like
fester,
like oozing.
I think of the Addams Family.
I think of like oozing and like molting. All right,
no,
it's gross.
That's just disgusting.
Yeah,
you can't get around moist. It's just crusty's pretty bad.
Doesn't bother me.
Crusty's,
I guess, in context
bad.
Like, you're talking like, if you're talking about a medical term, like something's crusty, then yeah, that's
okay.
Pretty gross.
I'm good. See, like, no, like my food was crusty. Like, come on, man. That's disgusting.
Would you rather your food be moist?
Yeah. If it's cake.
Cake, yeah. We can have like a nice crust on something, like a pan-seared.
Like my crusty sandwich?
No, like a pan-seared something. You got
but
a little crust.
That's pan-seared. That has some like...
you got a little crust to it.
That
and then
just
the center
rolls
is moist.
Off the tongue.
And then it festers in your stomach.
Crusty doesn't roll off the tongue. People abuse words, and they ruin them for other people.
That bat just dive bomb. I think it hit the ground.
So, buying cordless headphones was the worst decision I've ever made.
I hate those headphones.
I hate them. There is not a time
they fall
where I don't go
I
for a run. No, they stay on because they have the hooks around the ear.
Not for me.
But they, it first of all, it makes this horrible, and maybe it's because I bought them at Marshall's and they were cheap. And I know myself, and if I go out and buy Bose headphones, I'll lose them, and I will be so mad at myself.
I love my headphones. I have just like, I think they're Skull Candy ones. They were like $14. They're little in-the-ear buds.
They have to hook around the ear. Or they're just
See,
no good to me.
No, mine stay in perfectly. Like, I can't use, like, the iPhone.
No, those
iPhone
are
ones
because
they don't fit in my ears at all. But the ones that go in your ear with, like, the little cushiony part. And these ones, they sound great. They stay right in. I love those headphones.
Yeah, well, I went to go for a run the other day, and I had charged them the entire way up to Maine. So I go on the bike path. I start running. I might be running for a minute. And it goes... it sounds like a phone hanging up, and then they die.
I didn't like those because they have the string that goes from each one, and then there's like...
well, I wrapped it around my head.
No, but there's the volume thing on there, and it's heavy, and when you run it, like, slaps against your neck, and it would pull them out of my ears.
Well, luckily, I'm not running that fast.
So then I, like, put it over and, like, tried to have it underneath my chin, and then it just, like, choked me, and I don't like
And the problem,
them.
Like, I admire people who can go for a run with no music. They can just be with their thoughts.
I like that.
If I hear myself breathing... I realize that I'm like, I can't, if I hear myself breathing, heavy breathing, because I'm not one of those people who can, like, run and talk. I don't care how slow I'm running. I just can't do it. And if you tell me that's wrong, I just don't believe you. Like, I don't know how people run and talk at this. How can you have a conversation and be engaged in a run, in running?
I think if you're running long distance, you're probably not talking to somebody.
I just don't. I've never been a person that could do it. Maybe I don't train enough, but
I don't. I run alone.
They say if you can't have a conversation while you're running, then you're running too fast.
I don't.
But I'm still running 12-minute miles, so I don't think that's the case.
I don't get why you have to talk when you're running. Why can't you just focus on the task at hand?
It's just something that I've always heard.
No, I wouldn't.
That if you can't talk, have a conversation while you're running, you're running too fast.
Well, it all depends on what you're training for, too. Are you doing sprints? And yeah, you're running fast. If you're trying to do a long-distance marathon, you're going to dial back the intensity. But I don't think you need to fucking talk while you run.
If I'm working out, I don't want to be talking to anybody.
I don't talk to people while I'm doing squats or anything. Like, I don't get that logic.
Right. I don't either. I'm just, maybe it's...
I wouldn't put too much thought into that.
Maybe it's an old myth, just like fats are bad for you. Yeah. Maybe it's just something that has been...
Oh, that reminds me. I want to see. I forgot to bring the magazine home from work. There was a Psychology Today. Let's see if I can find
it. Psychology Today? Is that the name of the magazine?
Yeah, Psychology Today. I was flipping through it the other day at work. I had nothing going on. I think I was just monitoring phone time or something. There was an article in it about polyunsaturated fats, and I know... Oh, shit. We touched on it in the previous podcast with... Sorry, I'm trying to type in. Hold on. Psychology Today... Healthy fats and depression. We talked about in the episode of Paul Sear, we talked about healthy fats and their role in our health, but this article really talked about how it affects depression. Let's see if I can find the article because I wanted to read it. I thought it was really interesting. Don't think this is the article, but while diet, depression, and the microbiome, this might be it. I know this doesn't make for good radio right now, but you know what? I'll bring the article home from work and I'll read it. But what the hell is that?
Those freaking bats. It's freaking bats.
It was a really good article about how...
They're on a four-wheeler.
Really good article about how a certain amount of fats, healthy fats in your diet every day can help fight depression, anxiety, and other mental health. And it was a great article. It was a quick read. I wanted to read it on here, but also recommend... there's an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience with Dr. Kelly Brogan. It was just maybe a month ago. And she's a psychiatrist, and she talks about how she uses diet to help fight people's depression, and how she's getting way better results than when she was using, before she started doing that, she was using medications. It's episode 968 of the Joe Rogan Experience. She's a holistic women's health psychiatrist and author of the New York Times bestselling book, A Mind of Your Own. And it's like a 3-hour long episode, and it's amazing how she talks about the effects of diet on your health and how doctors are overprescribing SSRIs and other antidepressants. And
seems obvious.
Yeah. And just the effects, obviously I can't explain as well as she does, but the massive success she's having with changing people's diets. And she still uses medications sometimes, but I think she explains that, like, the thing she does with the diet is usually like the last ditch effort, but it's usually the thing that works the best in compared to the other medications. But I wish I brought that.
The diet is the last ditch effort?
Sometimes, yeah. Listen to the episode. It's really interesting. 968. I'll bring that article home though. I left it in my locker at work. Was that you or a squirrel?
That's an animal that's going to attack me.
Sounds like a chipmunk.
I don't know, but I don't feel safe, and you're faster than I am.
Well, there's one over here, too. They're circling us. Well, don't call them in.
I'm not. They don't like my whistles.
You're fine.
I hate nature.
Why?
Because it's scary.
Don't say that. My listeners are all about nature.
Well, I don't hate nature.
Now, what's that noise?
I hate the creatures in nature when I'm not protected in my house.
Is this fireworks?
Probably. We're really close to New Hampshire. I don't understand why fireworks aren't legal here.
I don't know.
It's stupid. It's not like... Actually, they announced... We know you're going to do fireworks on the 4th of July. If when you're going to do them, follow these precautions, and we're 100% done with this podcast because there's animals in the woods.
You want to go inside and finish up? All right, let's pause it and we'll go inside. Take that off before you...
So.
All right, we're back.
Come here often.
We're inside now. It's 9:30 at night, and there was bats dive bombing us. I wanted to stay outside, but somebody couldn't handle it, so we're inside.
It's a pretty rude way to boring. Talk to your guests.
Yeah, well, you ruined the show.
Well.
Mic's all fucked up now.
We can't all be as manly as the guy with the yeast infection.
Well, you should probably strive to be. I think the yeast infection from sitting on the couch.
Little bitch syndrome.
Doing the manly shit. There was stuff I wanted to read to you. Have you ever used the website StumbleUpon before?
No, because I'm not
a loser. It's my favorite thing ever. You go on and you make a,
I thought I was your favorite thing ever.
Yeah, think again. You go on. You make an account. And you can put in different interests. You can put in one interest.
Like
or,
how to, like, be nice to your girlfriend.
That's not one of them.
Hey.
You can put in like as many interests as you want, or you can just search one interest or like a group of five of them, and then you just hit the stumble button and it just brings you to random websites based on your interest. I do it when I'm bored. You learn some pretty interesting stuff.
I don't need to stumble on the internet when I can stumble in real life.
If we were still outside, you'd hear the crickets.
I hate you.
All right, but I found some interesting stuff that I wanted to share. First one, if I can find it.
Does it talk about how horrible radio hosts are? Because that's something I'm interested in.
That was actually one of the things I want to talk about.
They're awful.
Terrestrial radio versus podcasts, because I hate them. But hang on to that thought.
Oh, God.
The first thing I want to bring up was something called the Monster Study. And I'm going to read this. It's a short little thing on it. The Monster Study was a stuttering experiment performed on 22 orphan children in Davenport, Iowa in 1939. It was conducted by Wendell Johnson of the University of Iowa. Graduate student Mary Tudor conducted the experiment under Johnson's supervision. Excuse me. Half of the children received positive speech therapy, praising the fluency of their speech, and the other half negative speech therapy, belittling the children for speech imperfections. Many of the normal speaking orphan children who received negative therapy in the experiment suffered negative psychological effects, and some retained speech problems for the rest of their lives. It was dubbed the Monster Study, as some of Johnson's peers were horrified that he would experiment on orphan children to confirm a hypothesis. The experiment was kept hidden for fear Johnson's reputation would be tarnished in the wake of human experiments conducted by the Nazis during World War II. Because the results of the study were never published in any peer-reviewed journal, Tudor's thesis is the only official record of the details of the experiment. The University of Iowa publicly apologized for the Monster Study in 2001. However, Patricia Zebrowski, University of Iowa Assistant Professor of Speech Pathology and Audiology, notes that the data that resulted from the experiment is the largest collection of scientific information on the phenomenon of stuttering, and that Johnson's work was the first to discuss the importance of the stutterer's thoughts, attitudes, beliefs, and feelings, and continues to largely influence views on studying. So the when it gets into the what they actually did during the study, it was pretty brutal. Do I want to read the whole thing? Yeah, why not?
The research began with the selection of 22 subjects from a veterans orphanage in Iowa. None were told the intent of her research, and they believed they were there to receive speech therapy. Tudor was trying to induce stuttering in healthy children and to see whether telling stutterers that their speech was fine would produce a change. Included among the 22 subjects were 10 orphans, whom teachers and matrons had marked as stutterers before the study began. Tudor and five other graduate students who agreed to serve as judges listened to each of the children speak, grading them on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being poor and 5 being fluent, and concurred with the school's assessment. Five were assigned to Group 1A, the experimental set, and would be told that their speech was fine. The five in Group 1B, the controlled group, would be told that their speech is as bad as people say it is. The remaining 12 children were chosen at random from a population of normally fluent orphans. Six of these were assigned to 2A. These children ranged in age from 5 to 15, were to be told that their speech was not normal at all. And that...
Those poor kids!
I know, that gets worse. That they were beginning to stutter and that they must correct this immediately. The final six children in Group 2B, similar to those in Group 2A, were normal speakers who were to be treated as such and given compliments on their nice enunciation. On the first visit, Tudor tested each child's IQ and identified whether they were left-handed or right-handed. Do I want to skip over that? A popular theory at the time held that stuttering was caused by a cerebral imbalance.
When you were left-handed.
If, for example, a person was born left-handed but was using their right hand, their nerve impulses would misfire, affecting their speech. Johnson did not believe the theory but suggested Tudor test each child's handedness. She had them draw on chalkboards and squeeze the bulb of a dynamometer. All right, most were right-handed, but left-handed children were present in all the groups. There was no correlation between handedness and speech in the subject crop. During this period, they assigned numbers to the children, such as case number 15, experimental group 2A. The experimental period lasted from January until May, and the actual intervention consisted of Tudor driving to Davenport from Iowa City every few weeks and talking with each child for about 45 minutes. She followed an agreed-upon script. In her dissertation, she reported that she talked to the stuttering youngsters who were going to be told they did not stutter. She said to them in part, "You all grow the stuttering and you'll be able to speak even much better than you are speaking now. Pay no attention to what others say about you, your speaking ability, for undoubtedly they do not realize that this is only a phase." The non-stuttering youngsters in 2A who were to be branded stutterers, she said, "The staff has come to the conclusion that you have a great deal of trouble with your speech. You have many of the symptoms of a child who is beginning to stutter. You must try to stop yourself immediately. Use your willpower, do anything to keep yourself from stuttering. Don't ever speak unless you can do it right. You see how so-and-so stutters, don't you? Well, he undoubtedly started the same way you did." Yikes. They pretty much just, like, belittled these kids and tore them down.
That's horrible.
Yeah, listen to how they responded. The children in 2A responded immediately. After her second session with 5-year-old Norma Jean Pugh, Tudor wrote, "It was very difficult to get her to speak, although she spoke very freely the month before. Another in the group, 9-year-old Betty Romp, practically refuses to talk," a researcher wrote in his final evaluation. "Held hand or arm over eyes most of the time. Hazel Potter, 15, the oldest in the group, became much more conscious of herself and she talked less," Tudor noted. Potter also began to interject and to snap her fingers in frustration. She was asked why she said "ah" so much. Quote, "Because I'm afraid to say the next word. Why did you snap your fingers?" "Because I was afraid I was going to say ah." All the children's schoolwork fell off. One of the boys began refusing to recite in class. The other, 11-year-old Clarence Pfeiffer, started anxiously correcting himself. "He stopped and told me he was going to have trouble on words before he even said them," Tudor reported. She asked him how he knew. He said that the sound wouldn't come out. Feels like it's stuck in there. These are perfectly healthy kids, by the way, that they convinced had a problem. The sixth orphan, Mary Korlask, a 12-year-old, grew withdrawn and fractious.
I was like, that's not a word, but it should be.
Grew withdrawn and fractious. I should probably be in the study because I suck at reading out loud. During their sessions, Tudor asked whether her best friend knew about her stuttering. Korlask muttered, "No." "Why not?" Korlask shuffled her feet. "I hardly ever talked to her." 2 years later, she ran away from the orphanage and eventually ended up in the Ruffer Industrial School for Girls, simultaneously escaping her human experimentation. Mary Tudor herself wasn't untouched. 3 times after the experiment had officially ended, she returned to the orphanage to voluntarily provide follow-up care. She told all the 2A children that they didn't stutter at all. The impact, however, well-meaning, was questionable. She wrote to Johnson about the orphans in a slightly defensive letter dated April 1940. I believe that in time they will recover, but we certainly made a definite impression on them. And it was so bad. This was done in 39. In 2007, 6 of the children were awarded $925,000 for their suffering because their whole lives were ruined by it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they have research ethics now. You can't do that shit.
Well, they had them back then, too, but obviously the ethics were a lot different. No, they're
like, it's like pretty recent. Like, after the prison experiment where they, Harvard kids, it's a pretty famous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The
Milligrams experiment and the prison, yeah, experiment. They, now I have a stutter. You read that to me, and now I have a stutter.
Do you know how bad your stutter is?
Oh, God. It's horrible. It's bad. There was a huge thing on on ethical research, and I read a big thing about it when I was in a class. I had to do a research design, and it was just about, like, one guy. It was from, like, Columbia University, basically. He used a bunch of, like, the school's money and was purportedly, like, using it for the study, but they went against the ethics of the research in the school, and there was a bunch of money, like, not accounted for, basically. Mm-hmm. Researchers going as far as, like, joining gangs to learn about gang life and, like, pretending to be in a gang or buying drugs or selling drugs to, like, learn more about the gang. It's like, I don't know. It's I get it, but how do you really learn what you need to learn if you don't put yourself in it?
Yeah.
Like, if you're brave enough to do it, but then the line comes between, like, now that's government or state or educational funds being spent on.
Well, yeah, you always hear about the people who, like,
drugs and, you know,
the undercover cops who, like, infiltrate the Hell's Angels or whatever, and they actually become a Hell's Angel, right, for like 7 years, and they're doing drugs with them and selling drugs and selling arms and getting in gunfights. It's crazy that, right, they're legally doing that.
Hell's Angels is just like gangs like that are organized gangs, and people know what they do, and they still, like, that's America.
I don't know. Yeah, it says 6 children were awarded a total of $925,000. For lifelong psychological and emotional scars caused by 6 months of torment during the Iowa University experiment.
6 months?
That's all it took to ruin their lives.
That just seems like...
It just shows you, like...
It's a long time. I feel like it wouldn't take that long.
Like, how important is it just to be fucking nice to people? Yeah. Like, the way you speak to people has such an effect. Damage. Like, when your kid is acting up, like, obviously if you yell, they're gonna act up even more.
Yeah.
And, like, it reminds me of, like, this day and age, obviously, we're so torn. I made myself a promise when I started this podcast. I wasn't going to talk about politics. I'm not going to break that promise now, but I'm going to touch on it briefly. We're so torn right now with Democrat versus Republican, which are both fucking ridiculous. But anyways, like, in my short lifetime, I've never seen us this torn before. Mm-hmm. And the way people try to get their arguments across are so ridiculous. Like, they're just, like, yelling and screaming at each other. Do you really think that's the way you're going to get your point across? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, if someone, I don't know, say someone has, they think, I mean, pick your hot topic, economics, whatever. They have a point of view, and someone else just agrees with it, and they start the conversation, like, whether it's an online comment or maybe even in person, like, you're a fucking moron. That's not how this works.
Right.
When you start your conversation like that, how do you think people are going to respond?
Each other. Right. Yeah. Right.
And then they're going to respond with the same thing. No, you're a fucking moron. And, like, if you post, say I have a belief on something, and maybe even deep down I know there's some faults to it, even if you come at me with a bunch of stats and stuff that's going to prove me wrong, if you're really aggressive with it and you start your conversation with, like, calling me a moron or, like, saying my idea is stupid or, like, whatever it is, I'm going to double down on those thoughts, even if you have all the proof in the world, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if you want to get your point across, you don't do it by screaming at each other, saying, I'm right, you're wrong, or your side's an idiot, my side's right, when both sides are moronic, but that's a whole other can of worms. Like, come what's across with... What?
What's the saying? You catch more flies with...
Honey than vinegar.
Honey than vinegar?
Well, it's just, like, coming across, like, hey, I see that you feel that way. Here are some of the flaws in it. And, like, just being nice about it. Like, just be fucking nice to people.
My question is why anybody opens themselves up to that abuse. Like, to see comments online. And I find myself...
Well, you should never fucking comment online.
You know, you say I don't have any hobbies. I can get lost in a Facebook argument. Like, no... Like
that's
you,
not a very good hobby no, to get involved
it's
in.
No, it's pretty, like... It's like walking into Walmart. Like, you didn't feel so good about yourself during the day. Like, maybe you're a little bloated or you don't, you know, you had like a cinnamon sticky bun and you shouldn't have or whatever it is. And then you walk into Walmart and you're like, man, I'm not doing so bad. Like, that guy's ponytail starts at his ears. Like, I'm doing pretty good. And then you go online and go on Facebook and you find yourself like 46 comments deep into the most ridiculous argument. And you're like... My life is, like, it's really a good time to just reflect on how good you have it. Because you could be that guy in a heated debate about whatever it is.
I'm not big on Facebook, but I admittedly get sucked into YouTube rabbit holes. I'll start off by watching just a YouTube video about something. Before you know it, it's 3 hours later. I'm watching a weird video about how the earth is flat, and I'm reading the comments and getting heated about it. And, like... I get sucked into those weird conspiracy theory holes all the time. And
you realize all of these other people that are allowed to vote, and it's just crazy.
Oh, it's scary.
It's very scary.
Well, here's my theory on that. I think, first of all, never base any of your opinions off of online commenters, first and foremost. Don't get involved in it. If you're someone who comments online, again, and you know me, lose my number. Don't ever do that. But
unless you're tagging me in a meme, I don't want to know about it.
My theory on that is there's always been that many crazy people in the world, but before we had this place for them to all converge, it was always the people around town that you saw, like, every town has that, like, two or three guys that are, like, riding bicycles around town. Maybe they all meet at the VFW every night and get drunk. You know what I mean? Like, the weird tinfoil hat guys, like, the crazy guys. Like, when you were growing up, there's always that guy around town.
The guy that lost his license and has to drive his bike to the VFW.
Well, there was always the guy around town where your parents were like, hey, like, don't go near that guy. He's a little crazy. Maybe he was on the side of, like, outside the liquor store, like, screaming about something.
My dad was that guy.
Well, yeah. But now those people all have the internet, and they all have a voice, and they all have a place to converge.
And they have sketchy profile pictures.
Yeah.
Looking
so
at
now we could avoid those people before. Now it's all over the place, and it's tougher to avoid. You still avoid them, but they're there, and it's easy to get sucked into it because you see a moronic comment, and you want to say something. But it's just, if you're gonna come at it with more aggression, like, it's just, you're just spinning your wheels. You're not going anywhere. You're not going to change someone else's mind by telling them they're a moron or yelling at them about their opinion. Like, unless you're coming at them with facts and statistics and logic.
Statistically speaking,
it's not going to work. And then on top of that, 98% of the people who do comment or people in general, they think they have facts. They're not true
either.
Well, that's like, you're
the scariest part about it all is that at the end of the day, none of us actually know.
No.
Unless you are in the White House or you're in...
But not even that. Look at the political experts.
You're
from this.
On the battlefield or you're receiving intel or whatever the case is.
Oh, yeah,
you're
in that
there,
case.
You don't actually know.
In regards to, like,
going on.
Quote-unquote political experts, look at this last election. Everyone had Clinton... slated to win.
So what is
all
this?
The political experts were saying there is no thing as a political expert. We don't fucking know what the hell we're doing.
Right. Yeah. It's terrifying, honestly. And people say, well, you should care more about politics. I don't not care about politics. I don't have the time.
You can't get sucked into the bullshit.
To think I have the correct facts and then find out that it was all fueled by, you know, what. A company that is owned by another company that wants their company to do well and will tell you whatever you need to know to make sure that their company stays in place. Like, all of these American news stations are owned by a few percent of people that need to keep their way of life.
Well, there's caring.
And they're told to say whatever it is.
There's caring about politics where you actually... I think a lot of people, when they say you don't care about politics, that mean, like, those are the ones that are just not doing shit and just commenting on Facebook and stuff. There's actually caring about politics where you...
Well, there's caring about your country.
Well, there's you're putting research into your votes. You're going out there, you're signing petitions, you're voting for what you believe in. You're keeping up. Like, I keep up with... I have my finger on the pulse. That doesn't mean I'm commenting on every YouTube video about Trump.
No.
Or I'm commenting on Facebook about Clinton and starting arguments. But that's not caring about politics.
No.
That's being a fucking
moron.
No,
but it's hard to... want to be involved when you know you're just getting fed bullshit. Because
mm-hmm.
each side is so amped about their side. And it's not even unlikely these days to hear someone say... people don't even have conversations without saying, are you a Democrat or Republican? Because they need to know whether they shut you off.
See,
right
that,
away
that's
or not.
So wacky to me. This two-party system we have just is baffling to me. It's like, let's do 8 years of a Democrat. That didn't work. Let's do 8 years of a Republican. That
Nixon
didn't work.
Nixon and Kennedy... ran against each other. And the people that listened to it on the radio said that Nixon won. And the people that watched it on TV said that Kennedy won.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really have anything to do with party. That's more of how people use their different
senses. Well, Kennedy was a handsome guy who was charismatic
on
TV.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah.
They use their senses to determine... what they believe.
Not only your senses, but what's been...
Or what they like.
How you were programmed as a kid.
Right.
Like, we have this... For whatever reason, it probably goes back to primal, like, tribal feelings, but we have this need to be a part of a team, whether that's Team Democrat or Team Republican, or you're proud of being from the South, or you're from Boston versus New York. Like, we have this need to make... these sub-factions are like little like subcultures and teams no matter where we are. Like, people are proud to be from Massachusetts, and then they're proud to be a Red Sox fan. Anyone who's a Yankees fan sucks. And then you're a Democrat or you're a Republican. And anyone who opposes it, like, no matter what it is, if they're on the other side, you're going to oppose it. And you're going to vote for whatever your side says,
mm-hmm.
no matter how ridiculous it is.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how much the party lines change over the course of the years. And
yeah.
But there's no more voting on thoughts and policies and procedures and plans. It's
no.
It's voting on your color and whatever side you're on.
I always wish there could be a way where we could just go... And since the foundations of this country, there's been Republican and Democrat. And the rules have changed in each. A Republican was a Democrat. In today's
They've
terms,
completely
was
flip-flopped.
A Democrat.
Yeah.
And a Democrat was a Republican. But I wish there was a way, like almost like a blind dating contest that you see on... TV or whatever, in like a comedy show, where there's three guys on the other side of that curtain,
yeah.
and these are their personalities, and this is that, and choose the one you want, and then you get to find out who they are.
Until we break this two-party monopoly, that's why.
And then people say, well, if you're an independent, you're a Democrat. Well,
that's not true either. I don't even like the term independent, because then that has its stigma to it.
And I don't know if anybody else gets this, but people base... Well, how do you feel about abortion? How do you feel about illegal immigrants? Like, those are the hot topics.
I don't get why
and based
that comes
on how
up every
you feel
fucking
about
time.
Those things basically determines what party people
yeah.
say you should belong to.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to stop it there because, like I said, I don't want to get into politics. We could go forever on this.
Yeah, I know. And I don't either.
Yeah. I know I started it, but...
Yeah, you started it. What the hell?
But well, the main point I was getting to from that study is, like, we don't realize the way we treat people has such
yeah.
an effect on them. Like, they ruined those kids' lives for the rest of their lives because they were told they were stuttering morons.
And that's why there's research ethics now.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, just even beyond research, just
people.
In your everyday life, how you treat people, how you treat the person that's handing you your coffee in the morning, how you treat your coworkers, your family members. Like, just be fucking nice to people.
Like, hey, Larry, stop being a dick.
And even people you don't know. Stop
yeah.
getting worked up over stupid shit. So someone in your neighborhood, or maybe not even... Someone wants to get married and they're gay. Who gives a shit? Does it affect your life? Is it hurting you? No.
Yeah, but the
Let
people that are
it.
Negative about that stuff, you don't want to be... They make it known. Like, they put themselves in the position for you to get in an argument. I had a customer who, at any given chance, she was negative about anything she could be. And that's just the type of person they were.
That doesn't mean you have to give it back. Just be a nice person. That's all I'm saying.
No.
Just be nice to people.
Just saying, some people just, they look for negative attention. And those are the people that are hurting others.
Yeah. I'm just saying, be nice to people. You never know what someone's going through.
Don't tell me to be nice to people.
You don't know what other people's stories, and they could be having the worst fucking day, and
mm-hmm.
smile could keep them from killing someone.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. My mom always told me, be nice to the kid by himself.
Yeah.
I used to go sit with kids at lunch that would by themselves. One girl told me to go away. I'm like, fine. Cure my feelings. I went and sat with my friends, but it's like those are the kids that, unfortunately, those are the ones that end up doing something crazy.
Just be nice. All right, next thing I want. This is something that I brought up to you probably like a year ago. I talked about it. Remember I said I think we need, in regards to the war on drugs, we need to try something different. I think I never really like came to a foolproof plan on it, but I said maybe we should try like making drugs legal or making safe clinics and stuff like that. Yeah. So it was just announced that Boston will be getting a heroin clinic. So this is from NPR. It says Boston's heroin users will soon get a safer place. Will soon get a safe place to be high. And this is based off of. I think the only place in the world that does it right now, or maybe two places. I know Vancouver. Iceland or something. No, Vancouver is the big one, and I think New Zealand has a safe clinic as well.
There's a lot of places that a lot of countries do.
They're starting to pop up now, but up until a few years ago, it was only Vancouver.
Really?
Yep.
I feel like I've definitely researched this and that most countries, like, drugs are legal.
Definitely different countries.
They have safe places.
Different countries have different rules on drugs, but I'll read you this article real quick. Because now it hits home a little bit because obviously we're in Massachusetts and I work in the field, so it's going to be interesting to see how this works. But it says a Boston nonprofit plans to soon test a new way of addressing the city's heroin epidemic. The idea is simple. Along a stretch of road that has come to be called the Boston's Methadone Mile, the program will open a room in March with a nurse, some soft chairs, and basic life-saving equipment, a place where heroin users can ride out their high under medical supervision. Dr. Jesse Gaeta, chief medical officer at the Boston Healthcare for the Homeless Program, which initiated the project, walks the avenue several times a day on her way to and from work. The path takes her past the city's needle exchange program and a methadone clinic, as well as past one of the city's busiest emergency rooms, the Boston Medical Center. Quote, there are people just in a few blocks around our city and hospital that were watching overdose on our way from the parking lot, Gaeta says. Addiction treatment providers in the area have had hushed conversations for many months about creating a safe place where heroin users could get high. At least 8 countries around the world now have some sort of supervised injection facilities, monitored by nurses where patients can both use drugs and rest or sleep off the effects. With state statistics now indicating that roughly 4 Massachusetts residents die every day from an overdose, the need for some sort of new approach seems more urgent than ever, Gaeta says. Still, her organization plans only a limited version of the sort of safe space other countries offer. In Boston, patients would not be allowed to take drugs in the room. I'll say that's very different than Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver.
They literally sit there provides, with a counselor.
They provide them drugs. That's interesting because of the reasons that Vancouver's been so successful is because, let's see if I can find the article, they've been testing some of the drugs that are off the streets recently, and they're finding that 90% of all drugs, whether it's heroin, cocaine, anything, has fentanyl in it. So they're giving them completely clean heroin, and obviously they're not letting them overdose. They're getting clean needles. Hepatitis is...
So the government's sponsoring their drug use?
Well, they're also offering them counseling. So if I got the statistics right, I believe in the area surrounding the clinic they have in Vancouver, addiction rates are 35% lower than the rest of Vancouver. And then Vancouver as a whole, since it's been implemented, has gone down 9%, which is amazing. That sounds like a small number, but that's a huge number for addiction. This is really just offering... It's not a place where you'd be injecting, but it's a place where people would come if they're high and they need a safe place to be that's not a street corner, not a bathroom by themselves, where they're at a high risk of dying if they do overdose.
You're not going to leave the ground for a kid to step on.
No. This is definitely a step in the right direction, but I definitely would like to see, like, counseling involved and being offered and working on getting them off of it.
I feel like the problem with... I get it, and I've read the research on it, and it's actually very beneficial in other countries, and people aren't dying, and the streets are cleaner, and drugs, illegal drugs aren't sold as much. I get all of the positives, but I see a negative of people and like the pushback being that the government is sponsoring drug use, which people already, especially in our area, I can't speak for other areas, but in especially in our area, the methadone clinics and the amount of people on government subsidized, living in government subsidized housing, on welfare, it's such a hot topic around here that for another thing to be added on is the government is now sponsoring drug use.
That's not this.
And I know. And when you don't work in the in the
recovery
field, you don't get it.
You don't.
But that's where legislation, that's where it fails, because if it comes to a vote, I just don't see it going through. And I know Boston's a lot more progressive, but lately it just seems with the political climate and things that have been going on, I don't see
Here's
it
the thing.
Happening.
The war on, we started this stupid-ass war on drugs in the 80s with Reagan,
yeah.
And it was a noble cause, but we have to realize that it's not working. You can't just say no. If we could just say no, nobody would be addicted. I wouldn't have a job. Everyone would be happy-go-lucky, all right? We've tried all this shit. We tried the just say no. We tried the methadone clinics, the Suboxone stuff. It's not working. So we have to try something new.
Yeah.
And it's not that we're the government is subsidizing drug use. Drug use is never going to go away. It's never going to be a 0% of people on drugs. It's always going to be there. But if we can diminish that number as much as we can, and we can't help people who are dead, all right? So that's what this is going to be doing. It's going to be getting people. We're going to be saving lives, be cutting down on transmitted diseases like hepatitis C or HIV and AIDS.
Yep.
People are going to be safer. There's not going to be needles in the street. And hopefully, these people are going to eventually, if we can incorporate some counseling, they're going to, you can't put someone in an addiction center if they're dead. So we're keeping them alive and we're giving them the chance to be healthy again.
I get it. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Well, we have to try. That's why trust me, I know how controversial this is. I've worked in the fields for 4 years now. I know this is not like an easy thing to say, but if we want to talk about eliminating drugs or at least cutting down as much as possible in regards to drug dealers, you got to cut them from the source,
yeah.
All right? The Mexican cartels aren't selling prescription pills on the streets. Why? Because they're available everywhere, all right? They're selling the shit that's illegal. If we make it illegal, you're cutting them out completely. We're not going to physical war with the cartels is going to do nothing but add more bloodshed, all right? Those people are ruthless. They're never going to stop killing as long as we're killing them too, all right? But if you cut their money source out, now they got nothing to fucking work with. Sure, they'll find something to sell and peddle and stuff, but if we make it legal and the only place where you can get it is a place where you have to come to and get supervised medically, have safe needles, have safe heroin or whatever your drug is, because that's what's killing people, and then couple that with counseling, are you going to have a 100% success rate? No. But if you can even have a 10% success rate, that's way more than what we're getting with AA and rehab centers right now. And that's not to say that rehab centers and AA aren't great, but if you can, but the numbers are very low.
Yeah.
Also, the numbers are very skewed on those. Like, I think the last time I looked, it's something like 2-4% of people, according to these studies, get long-term sobriety after leaving a 30-day facility, which they consider long-term sobriety a year's worth.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't factor in is some people will leave a 30-day facility, slip up and drink for a week, but then get right back on, and then they have 5 years of sobriety. That's a success in my book, but considering during those statistics, that's a failure because they drank after they left. So those statistics are definitely skewed, but it's still a very low success rate. And we have to try something. We can't keep going down these road. So many people are dying. So many people are dying because we're seeing where I work now. People come in and we ask them what their drug of choice is, and they say heroin or cocaine or meth. And they take a drug test and they have none of that in their system. It's mm-hmm. pure fentanyl. They don't know what they're getting anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And people are dying left mm-hmm. and right. And it's horrible.
And they're dying right when they leave.
Yeah, and that's the worst part, because a lot of times you're more susceptible.
They're doing what the alcoholics are doing, and they're not living because they're taking the same
amount.
Well,
no, it's not nothing to do with alcoholics per se, but it's.
But when alcohol isn't cut with fentanyl. They're not taking the same dose. You can take a shot of vodka when you get out, and it's not gonna kill you.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You can go to
take the same dose of heroin,
and you can't handle it anymore.
Well, you go to a 30-day to 90-day program, your tolerance goes down dramatically, and you go back out and try to shoot 2 grams a day like you did before, and you're definitely more susceptible to die at that point. But I don't know. I think this medically assisted... I mean, look at the MAPS program, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. What they've been doing, let me pull it up, with LSD is absolutely fantastic right now.
They've been studying that for years. Actually, decades.
MAPS, LSD study. Well, they just got approval last year, and it's the first study of its kind to ever get approval to do research... government research on marijuana and the effects on addiction. So it's going to be interesting to see how they couple marijuana with counseling in low doses and with those who are addicted and see if it has any effect on them. But they do have completed studies from their LSD-assisted therapy, assisted psychotherapy, on PTSD. And if I can find the... If I can find this... I want to find the certain statistics. It's absolutely amazing what they did. LSD with the
soldiers.
Yeah, with the soldiers. LSD-assisted psychotherapy.
LSD.
I can't find the article.
Yeah, Marty Walsh has done a lot in the last couple of years for drug addiction.
I can't find the article. What they did was they took soldiers who got back from the war, and I guess PTSD, I'll have to find the article and link it in the bio because I don't want to get these stats wrong, but PTSD can be ranked on a scale. I believe it's from like 0 to 100 or 120, something like that. And the average person falls anywhere between like 0 to 20. Like everyone in their life has some type of traumatic incident, but it's usually pretty small, like whether it be like a grandparent passing away,
yeah, or like whatever, like scale, right?
Yeah, there's a scale. So the average person, I think, if I remember correctly, is around like 15 or so. The average
out of how many?
Like 100 to 120. Okay. The average soldier that was coming home from war was at like 85,
yeah,
and they were through the roof. So they did these treatments with LSD, and they were micro doses. So I think people get this wrong image in their mind when we talk about psychotherapy using psychedelics, that people are just getting blasted on LSD and listening to the Grateful Dead and whatever. They're taking these microdoses where they're barely even, I don't even know if they're even feeling high, but it's just doing something enough in their brain to change the brain chemistry. And a lot of times it helps them open up a lot too. Like, that's why I'm interested to see where the marijuana study goes, because I think edible marijuana has an amazing introspective effect to it. We can really help people with ego problems or narcissism, or it'd be curious to see if it helps with addiction. But anyways, back to the LSD one. They did, I want to say, again, I wish I could find the statistics. I want to say it was 6 sessions over the course of like 4 to 6 months where they had a microdose of LSD and then counseling. And after those sessions, the average PTSD scale went from 85 down into the 40s. But then the more amazing part was, after the study was done and they stopped taking LSD, they followed up like 3 to 5 years later, and the numbers kept going down, mm-hmm, even after the LSD. But it had some certain effect on brain chemistry, and they were able to get through the counseling way better. And compared to the control, the people who didn't do LSD while they had counseling, they were still in like the 60s to 80s. But now these other people who did it were down like the 20s and almost back at a normal range again. Wow. So it's had an absolutely amazing effect on it. And now I think they just started this year the marijuana one. So it's going to be interesting to see that too. But
yeah,
if we can get people off of this shit, like, and I don't know, I'm really on the fence too, because I think marijuana could be an absolutely amazing tool to have, because it's a lot safer than something like a methadone or a Suboxone or any of these other drugs that are still getting you high. But at the same time, working in this field, I've seen so many people leave clean, and then you hear about them using marijuana and then eventually leading back to their drug of choice, and then eventually you hear about them dying. Like, I've heard it so many times, a heroin user leaves our program, they're clean for a little bit, they think they got it, they pick up some weed, they smoke that for a little bit, and then when they're high on weed, they think, you know what, I can handle some heroin too, and then they OD and die. So I'm so on the fence because I see both sides of it, mm-hmm. but I just think the benefits of the marijuana can be absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a hard one to push through because, like you're talking about before, the corporations, you got people, you got the freaking corrections officer union lobbying against marijuana because their jobs are going to go away. If marijuana is legal, that's what makes up the majority of the people who are in jail is nonviolent drug offenders.
Yeah.
So, and this isn't a conspiracy theory. You can look this up. The corrections officer union has actually lobbied against legal marijuana. Know who else has lobbied against legal marijuana? The pharmaceutical companies who make fentanyl, because they're afraid that their drug's gonna go away. The drug that's killing people is fighting against the wonder drug that could save people. That's never killed anyone in the history of its existence, and we're going with the fentanyl over the marijuana. It is baffling to me. Absolutely baffling.
Money is such a necessary evil in our everyday lives, but those are the real criminals.
Yep.
Honestly.
Yeah. Well, go back to why marijuana became illegal in this country to begin with. I know you've heard me spout this a million times, but William Randolph Hearst, back in the early 1900s, he owned a paper company. He owned a newspaper company. I believe he had stock in like cotton and stuff as well. And hemp was a booming industry. And Time magazine came out with an article, "Hemp, the next billion-dollar industry." And this guy had already... William Randolph Hearst had put so much money and time and devoted his life to this paper company, he knew he was going to be obsolete. So he got his buddies in politics. He started lobbying to make marijuana illegal because marijuana has the hemp stock. Even though hemp itself is non-psychoactive at all, hemp is the most wonderful thing in the world. Not only health benefits of hemp, but you can make an entire house out of hemp that's way more energy efficient, from the concrete to the drywall to the insulation. Everything can be made from hemp.
I don't understand that.
Look up hemp concrete. It's 10 times stronger than regular concrete. The original model Ford Model T was made with hemp paneling. You can take hammers to it and it wouldn't dent. Serious, there's videos online. Hemp is amazing. You can make anything out of hemp. Hemp paper was used back then. It was way stronger than regular paper. Canvases.
Where did we go wrong?
Do you know where the word why canvases are called canvases? Because the Latin word
cannabis.
Yeah, the Latin word for cannabis was canvas, and that's what canvases were made out of. It's an absolutely wonderful material that was made illegal,
specifically grown for the industrial uses of its derived products.
And it grows something like 15 times faster than trees. Like you can grow multiple hemp growths in a year. It's way more efficient. Energy-wise...
There's less than 1% of THC in hemp.
Yeah, it's non-psychoactive. So you can buy hemp protein from the store right now, but it's imported from Canada or a different country because you can't grow it here.
Right.
It's legal to own. But anyways, William Randolph Hearst started all this lobbying against it, and then that's when they came out with Reefer Madness and told people that...
Oh, yeah.
They got the middle class scared. They said, if you have a daughter and they... they smoke weed, they're going to get raped by Mexicans and black people. And they did this big smear campaign against it. And that's why it's illegal, is because of money and people are afraid of it. So certain people could stay rich. And that's where we are now. We have this...
Same shit, different day.
We have this private prison industry now, which is fucking ludicrous to begin with. And now they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs. So they're lobbying against it when it can save millions of lives in regards to the CBD oils with pain management and cancer and different like leukemia and all this stuff that's been proven to help, which again, CBD oils are non-psychoactive. People think that you're getting high off them, you're not. And then you got pharmaceutical companies going against it as well because they're afraid of losing money when they're literally killing people, and this drug can save people, yet we're lobbying against it.
We need to go back to our original point and say, just be nice to everybody.
Exactly.
Because if William Randolph Hearst wasn't such a dick, things would be better.
Yep. If a lot of people weren't a dick, things would be better.
Just stop being dicks, people.
Nah, I feel like I'm losing you, so maybe we can wrap this up.
I'm just thinking about my chicken burning.
All right. We done?
We're done.
All right, that's all we got.
Over.
It's a very non-dramatic ending.
Do you want me to just blow up on you?
You want to sing us out? Give us a little outro song?
I can't. I get stage fright.
All right. That's all we got. Go fuck yourself. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. When I say go fuck yourself, I mean it with all the love in the world. Go check out pompod.net, pompod.net. Scroll to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Amazon banner, and shop as you normally would. Or click on any of the links in the description of our YouTube videos. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We're everywhere. Go find us. Go listen to us. And most importantly, turn off your phone now. As the great David John Matthews said, unplug the TV and turn off your phone. Get outside. Go for a hike. Go take your friends. Go take your family members. Go take your dogs, your cats, your lizards, your snakes, whatever you got. Go for a hike. Go enjoy the weather. Turn off the phone for 5 hours and just get out there. It's not going to kill you. You might actually have a little bit of fun. All right. So until next week, bye-bye.